Judgment and Justice, Reflection 5. In the previous talk, The Crisis of Leadership and the Collapse of Society, we see that even among God's people, there's increasing oppression, sin. It's not just the oppression of the poor by the rich, but a widespread taking advantage of others, just looking out for number one. A lack of respect towards others, including elders, and a rude spirit. It's very selfish and greedy. We see this, sadly, among some members of our society in times of sickness, in times of pandemic. People who don't care about the health of others, who really are not bothered at all by the thought that they might be bringing contagion to someone else, or those who hoard goods, not so that they can do any good by it, but just so that the next fellow won't get all the goods. We can also see this kind of dynamic in times of acute injustice, when people have had enough. Of course, one natural reaction is to give up, to be so depressed and quiet, to do nothing, and just simply capitulate. But there's another natural response, which is to take revenge, to go out and to protest or riot or rob even one who has been responsible for our being robbed, maybe metaphorically speaking. That is, to take it out on those who are in a better situation of life. And that's not right either. The Bible never allows that kind of retaliation. Jesus didn't stand for it, neither did Paul. Read Romans 12, read Matthew 5. So I think there's so many things when we're looking at the decay of society, at people behaving badly, so many aspects of Israel's dynamics, even though it's the 8th century BC, but they apply to our modern day. And we are to be Christians all the time, not just in church, not just when it's convenient, but in season and out of season, even when it's very difficult. Well, the previous oracles we've been looking at have been a bit heavy, right? The collapse of society, we see the punishment of injustice, and there's some very strong and negative images. But there was a very positive one. You'll remember that in the beginning of chapter 2, we had this beautiful picture of the Messianic age. Gentiles streaming to Jerusalem. The Lord humbles the haughty and his people, the light of the world. They fear him, and they're not caving in to fear of others. And God purifies us. And the fire punishes and destroys, but for the pure of heart, this facilitates a new beginning. It was a very beautiful passage. That was in the beginning of chapter 2, and then right after that, it got very heavy again. Well, there's a kind of framing. There are two oracles of hope, the one we looked at earlier in chapter 2, and today's text, and they, in a sense, balance out the doom oracles, which run from 2:6 to 4:1. And they balance it out, and they also frame it. So we're alternating now. We're going from the negative of the fourth reflection to a very positive message from the prophet Isaiah here in our fifth reflection. I'll be reading the whole text. It's very short. It's from 4:2 to 4:6. That's the end of the chapter. So it's just those five verses. Let's look at those. And maybe after this is over, in your free time, you can look at this chapter again and compare it to the beginning of chapter 2, and you'll see more what's going on. All right, I'm going to read it in full, and then comes the commentary. In that day, the branch of the Lord shall be beautiful and glorious, and the fruit of the land shall be the pride and honor of the survivors of Israel. And he who is left in Zion and remains in Jerusalem will be called holy, everyone who has been recorded for life in Jerusalem, when the Lord shall have washed away the filth of the daughters of Zion and cleansed the bloodstains of Jerusalem from its midst, by a spirit of judgment and by a spirit of burning. Then the Lord will create over the whole site of Mount Zion and over her assemblies a cloud by day and smoke and the shining of a flaming fire by night. For over all the glory there will be a canopy. There will be a booth for shade by day from heat and for a refuge and a shelter from the storm and rain. Well, this is a really uplifting passage. Let's unpack it. He says, in that day, the branch of the Lord shall be beautiful and glorious. That phrase, in that day, is more or less equivalent to the phrase in the latter days or in the last days, which speaks of a time in history that's on the way, may be very close, but there are overtones. It's kind of it points even beyond itself. The imagery points to the end of time as well, to things that will take place when the Lord returns at the judgment day. So the image is not just for the end of the world. It has applicability before then. Okay, so that's the phrase, in that day. And then it mentions the branch of the Lord. Now, in Isaiah 11, the Messiah is a branch or a shoot or a root of Jesse. We'll see that when we get to chapter 11. Jesse's the father of David and the Messiah is the son of David. This is actually a different word, but I think the imagery is the same. And we see that the notion of the Messiah being the branch of the Lord, not only in a couple of passages in Isaiah, but in other prophets as well, and in the New Testament. And it says that it will be beautiful and glorious. The fruit of the land shall be the pride and honor of the survivors of Israel. Again, very positive. But it is because of God's presence. There's a fresh start. He mentions survivors. So although Israel, the north and the south, will be ultimately destroyed by Assyrians, and for the south, the Babylonians, there's still a hope. There's still a remnant. Then we read, he who is left in Zion and remains in Jerusalem, these are the same place, two ways of saying Jerusalem, will be called holy, everyone who has been recorded for life in Jerusalem. So to participate in this glorious future, we need to live a holy life. He's not saying that, well, we don't have to live a holy life, but God will pretend we're holy because of Christ's righteousness. That's not the way the atonement works. That's not the way justification and sanctification work. Sadly, been very misunderstood by many Christians. But those who remain will be called holy because they are holy. Everyone who's been recorded for life in Jerusalem. Now, I know some people will hear that phrase, recorded for life, and think that it's fatalistic. It's already been predetermined, predestined. But no, this is not Calvinism. The notion of being recorded is found in many Old Testament books. In Exodus 32, for example, where Moses suggests that God could blot him out of his book of life. And the Lord says, no, whoever sinned against me, I'll blot out of my book. So that image is found in Exodus. We find it even more explicit in Psalm 69, 28, and Daniel 12, 1, Malachi 3, 16, even in Luke 10, 20. If I'm speaking too quickly, don't worry. All these passages are in the notes that come with this talk. Being recorded for life, it depends on what we do, our response of faith. And we could be in the book of life and then remove from it if we give up the faith. The next bit to focus on here, he mentions a cleansing of filth by a spirit of judgment and a spirit of burning. That's maybe the most heavy or negative part of this chapter, but this itself is actually positive. Yes, there's a spirit of judgment and burning, and that's normally associated with punishment and pain, and we get that. Frequently, that's how the Lord works in our lives, isn't it? We're purified by punishment, and the punishment is often simply the result of our own poor decisions. Or things may be difficult in society, or maybe temporarily in our lives, there's a real crisis, and good can come out of that. Discipline comes because of sin, but the Lord uses it for good. We see this in Romans 8, 29. Being conformed to the character of Christ is painful. So there will be a judgment, and there will be punishment. But this oracle is focusing on the good that comes out at the other end of that process. There are survivors, there is a remnant, and they've been purified in that painful fire. The crucible is not a comfortable place. Then the Lord, it says, will create over the whole of Mount Zion. It mentions a cloud by day, flaming fire by night. Well, that's a clear reference to Exodus 40. First Kings 8, so after the temple is constructed, and previously after the tabernacle is constructed, God moves in, so to speak, his presence, his divine Shekhinah glory comes, and then he leads the people. He leads them. This is a beautiful image. It's a throwback, not as much to the temple as to the tabernacle, as God's people are on the move, hopefully moving by faith. He mentions a canopy and a booth for shade, a refuge and shelter. So God is protecting us. And it's pointing back to the final verses of the book of Exodus, and where God has gone to painstaking trouble to provide for our protection, for our comfort. It's a beautiful image, okay? I unpacked it. I'm going to read it again. In that day, the branch of the Lord shall be beautiful and glorious, and the fruit of the land shall be the pride and honor of the survivors of Israel. And he who was left in Zion and remains in Jerusalem will be called holy, everyone who's been recorded for life in Jerusalem. When the Lord shall have washed away the filth of the daughters of Zion and cleansed the bloodstains of Jerusalem from its midst by a spirit of judgment and by a spirit of burning. Then the Lord will create over the whole site of Mount Zion and over her assemblies a cloud by day, a smoke and the shining of a flaming fire by night. For over all the glory there will be a canopy. There will be a booth for shade by day from the heat, and for a refuge and a shelter from the storm and the rain. These are such encouraging words. In our next reflection, well, I'm not going to spoil it right now. I'll simply give you the title, Vineyard, Woe, and Invasion. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.